Oh, blimey. Looks like there's going to be some swearing today.
You're bloody right.
So piss off if you don't like it.
It's August 28th, 2003, at Radio City Music Hall in New York City. It's the opening number at the MTV Video Music Awards. Two little girls appear in white dresses with matching hair bows and lace gloves. They walk around the stage with small white baskets, throwing flower petals at the crowd. The curtain goes up, and there in the center is a 17-foot-tall wedding cake. And standing on top is a veiled bride wearing a white lace bustier and a tattered white tulle skirt with a belt that reads Boy Toy.
Okay, been here, done that.
Oh, it's different this time, trust me. As the bride starts to sing Like a Virgin, she lifts her veil and it's Britney Spears.
It's Britney, bitch.
Britney's recreating Madonna's iconic performance from 1984, the same one that thrust her into superstardom. But this time, the cake has stairs, so Britney can easily descend to the stage and not lose a shoe.
Ah, lesson learned.
Totally. And when Britney makes her way to the bottom of the cake, she's joined by another veiled bride in exactly the same getup. And when her veil is raised, it's Christina Aguilera.
It's Chrissy, bitch. Okay, that doesn't have the same ring.
Definitely not. But the crowd goes wild again. In 2003, Britney and Christina are two of the biggest stars in the world, and they've both been influenced by Madonna. Like her, they've both felt called to the stage since they were very young. Stepping into her shoes for this performance is a way to signal that they're not child stars anymore. They're ready to be just as provocative and controversial as their idol. The two pop stars dance, tease the audience, and even roll around on the stage, the same way Madonna did when she gave her performance back in '84. But as incredible as this double wedding is, something's missing. As the chorus comes to an end, Britney and Christina both turn back towards the giant wedding cake, matching bouquets in hand. The music changes, and from the top of the cake emerges Madonna. She's wearing black from head to toe. Her black pants are tucked into knee-high black leather stiletto boots. Her black lace bra peeks through a sheer black top underneath a fitted black tuxedo jacket with tails. And she's finished the look with a tilted, you guessed it, black top hat. This time, she's the groom, and she's in charge of the stage. The audience gets to its feet, giving her a well-deserved standing ovation. Britney and Christina might be the belles of the ball, but Madonna will always be the true queen of the season. And tonight, she's got something to prove. So she's going to give a performance that people will be talking about for decades. From Wondery, I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And I'm Brooke Ziffrin.
And this is Even the Rich. In our last episode, Madonna shocked the world, but took things a little too far. When she needed to do some damage control, she turned things around with her role in Evita and found herself on the cusp of motherhood. But Madonna's not about to become a stay-at-home mom. Now, she's got a whole new set of problems, balancing motherhood, marriage, and her provocative, explosive career. This is episode 4. Bitch, I'm Madonna. That's the champagne. Okay, let's take things back a bit. 7 years, to be exact. On October 14th, 1996, Madonna gives birth to a baby girl. She names the 6-pound, 9-ounce baby with soft, brown, curly hair, Lourdes Maria Ciccone Leon.
Oh, baby Lola.
I know, I love that nickname. And baby Lola really pulls on Madonna's heartstrings. She falls in love with her daughter and makes a promise to be the best mother she can be. Madonna later says in Harper's Bazaar
that just because she was a freedom fighter didn't mean she was qualified to raise a child. Lola's birth sets Madonna on a new path. She's determined to search for meaning in life and pass that sense of meaning onto her daughter. And that opens the door to Kabbalah. Madonna starts interpreting the Torah and learning about Jewish mysticism.
Okay, wait, so is she Jewish now?
Well, no. In Kabbalah, all faiths are welcome, so she doesn't convert. But she does jump in with both feet. And of course, when Madonna does something, the world takes notice. She's photographed a bunch of times wearing the little red string bracelet meant to ward off evil.
Oh my God, I remember those.
Yeah, it's because they were everywhere in the late 90s and early 2000s. Other celebrities start dipping their toes in Kabbalah too. Demi Moore, Ashton Kutcher, and Britney Spears are all spotted wearing the red bracelet. But none of them take the plunge quite like Madonna. She takes Kabbalah very seriously. And when she sits down to write her next album, Madonna has a new alter ego.
Sayonara, Mistress Dita.
Mistress Dita is long gone. In her place is Veronica Electronica. And she's a mystical being.
Proof that Cali weed just hits different.
It sure does. Madonna harnesses Veronica's energy and records a new album called Ray of Light. And it's different from anything she's ever done before. Thanks to the birth of Lola and her studies in Kabbalah, Madonna's moving from material girl to celestial girl. And it's all coming out in the recording studio. She sings about Lola. She sings about her mother. She sings about the perils of fame and the price she paid to achieve success. In the title track, Madonna says she wanted the lyrics to convey the feeling of being small in comparison to the vast universe. To her, Ray of Light is deeply spiritual. But she's still Madonna, so it's also a dance record.
Oh, you know the Dalai Lama's dancing to that in the clubs.
He's got a killer two-step, I'm sure. But David Brown of Entertainment Weekly says that Madonna has dipped the songs in a light batter of electronica, the hissy staccato pulsations of ambient techno and drum and bass flit in and around her like celestial seasonings.
I've always wanted to dance to celestial seasonings.
So spicy. I mean, it's definitely weird, but the album totally works. Ray of Light becomes one of Madonna's biggest critical and commercial successes. The album is released in the U.S. on March 3rd, 1998. And in less than 3 weeks, it skyrockets to number 2 on the Billboard 200 list. It sets a record for the biggest first-week sales by a female artist with 371,000 copies sold. The album goes on to win 4 Grammys, including Best Pop Album. It's her first Grammy for her music. Before this, she's only won for her videos.
Wait, really? That's actually surprising to me.
Right, same. Her last 2 albums were critical failures. And now the critics are using words like brilliant and mature. But there's just one problem. They can't seem to get over her age. Brown follows up his praise for the music with a dig, saying, "Throbbing yet meditative, Ray of Light is an adult's version of dance music, with the dark timbres of Madonna's nearing 40 voice, its resolute center."
I'll take age shaming for 2000, Alex.
Oh, Alex. But David doesn't stop there. He writes, "You've heard of postmodern pop. This is postpartum pop. For all her grapplings with self-enlightenment, Madonna seems more relaxed and less contrived than she's been in years. Ray of Light is truly like a prayer."
It's like an insult wrapped in a compliment.
Yeah. And he's not the only one going there. Around this time, critics start putting a lot of emphasis on Madonna's age and motherhood. It's like they can't believe that a woman nearing 40 could possibly still be relevant to pop culture. Even when they praise her, you can feel the shock and disbelief oozing from their words. It's like the unspoken part of every compliment they give her is, "Can you believe she's almost 40? And that doesn't go unnoticed by Madonna. It frustrates her to be put into a box when her whole career has been about thinking outside the box. In a weird way, being sexy at 40 is the ultimate transgression. It's the same work she's been doing all along. Age is just one more taboo to smash. But with Ray of Light, Madonna showed that she's just as connected to her audience as she's always been. And they don't care how old she is. Because yeah, she is embracing her maternal side. And as far as she's concerned, 40 is barely middle-aged. Plus, she's got a massive hit record. And she's falling in love. It's December 22nd, 2000 in Scotland. Madonna's wearing an ivory silk corseted gown with delicate sheer lace sleeves. An antique veil cascades down to the floor, held in place with a tiara from Asprey, the famed London jeweler.
Ah, you know what they say. Every kiss begins with Asprey.
All my kisses begin with cubic zirconia. But today, Madonna's only wearing jewels fit for a princess. In addition to the tiara, she's wearing 5-inch diamond and pearl cuffs and a large 37-carat diamond cross around her neck from Harry Winston. She's spared no expense because this is her fairy tale wedding.
Wait, wedding? Okay, I'm still getting over the surprise baby from last week.
Right. Well, might as well get the other surprises out of the way. Madonna's about to marry British director Guy Ritchie. And they've already got a brand new baby boy, Rocco. Madonna and Guy meet in 1999, and they have an instant connection. She feels something she hasn't experienced since meeting Sean on the set of her Material Girl video. She says, "My head didn't just turn. My head spun round on my body. I was taken by his confidence. He was very sort of cocky, but in a self-aware way."
Sounds like she has a type.
Oh, definitely. But what she really finds attractive about Guy is that he treats her like a normal person and not an icon. He calls her Madge and even gets her to wash his car with him.
Okay, how many bottles of Evian did that take?
At least a crate. Their love affair moves quickly. Guy courts her as if she's an ordinary girl, and she loves it. She introduces him to Kabbalah, and they embrace the teachings together. They build their own little world, and Madonna starts running in a whole new circle. In fact, she's practically a British society lady now. Guy introduces her to the English social set, and she takes to them like a material girl to a material world. She starts speaking in a fake British accent and hanging out with Sting, his wife Trudy Styler, and Stella McCartney. She's a long way from that scrappy Michigan girl who couch surfed in New York. She's matured, and she's even given up on some of her constant need for attention. A photographer snaps photos of her 4-year-old daughter as she walks barefoot down the aisle. Madonna smiles, knowing that these are the only photos that will be taken today.
Oh, no helicopters this time?
Nope. Guy really wants this wedding to be private. And unlike last time, Madonna actually listens. She takes every precaution possible to stop the paparazzi from infiltrating their special day. She doesn't even let her own guests take pics.
Wow, and this is before tagged Facebook photos, so very ahead of her time.
Yeah. Madonna turns the ultra-exclusive Skibo Castle into a fortress. She books all 21 rooms so that only her guests are on the premises. She hires a top-notch security team and makes all the hotel staff sign a 4-page confidentiality agreement. And everyone has to turn over their phones, unplugging for 5 days. All the precautions pay off. The paparazzi have the place surrounded, but they can't get past the bushes. As the bagpipes play, Madonna links arms with her father and tears well up in her eyes. She walks down the aisle towards Guy, who's wearing a tartan kilt. It's usually worn without underwear, and he's upholding the tradition. 4-month-old Rocco is dressed just like his father, but with a diaper.
Smart move.
Very. And as she says, "I do," in front of the century-old stained glass windows, Madonna beams at the photographer she hired. After years of living entirely out in the open, she's finally keeping her private life private. At the reception, she remarks to a friend, "I think I've given enough, don't you?" Everything's coming up roses for Madonna. She's happily married with two beautiful children. She's worth more than $600 million. And she's more famous than she's ever been. But while she's shutting herself up in her private English world, her fans are getting restless. In her quest for privacy, she's pulling down a veil between herself and her biggest supporters. While they can't see in, she can't see out either. And that means Madonna's missing the seismic shift happening right underneath her feet.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank?
Literally always.
Okay, well, the new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look, and it comes in luxe gold packaging. It feels incredibly high-end, but it is a lot more affordable.
Oh yeah, the Panorama Mascara lives up to its name by giving your lashes panoramic volume and a fully fanned-out look. Its tapered mascara wand catches every single lash, including those hard-to-reach corner lashes.
When I do wear makeup, I do the bare minimum, and that's usually eyeliner and mascara and lip gloss.
Yeah.
And so mascara has to really pop.
Yes.
And let me tell you, L'Oreal, this baby pops.
Yeah. I do love the packaging. Like, I'm all about that.
So if you're looking for an affordable mascara that gives you voluminous, lengthened lashes, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
So as a listener of Even the Rich, you know that audio piques the imagination, which is why we're so excited for Audible's new collection of exclusive thrillers. They feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances that really bring the story to life.
Oh, yeah. The next listen on my list is the psychological thriller, The Silent Patient.
Ooh.
So it's all about a therapist who tries to unravel the mystery of a woman who refuses to talk or give any explanation as to why she shot her husband. I mean, it's going to be the perfect binge listen, and you know I love my thrillers.
I can agree. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog.
Yeah, new members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500.
That's audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500 to get started.
Soon after their wedding, Madonna and Guy buy a little slice of country heaven. And by little, I mean 1,200 acres. Their new estate is so fancy, it even has something called an orangery, which is a room where you grow oranges.
Okay, I didn't know there was a word for that, but I like it.
Yeah, well, you might not like this. Their estate is also ranked one of Britain's top venues for pheasant shooting.
Okay, my one dream is that we can go one season without shooting.
I don't think that's ever going to happen, but we can try. Madonna is really into it, though. She's already started speaking in a British accent, and now she's living a full-on British life. She learns how to shoot pheasants and ride horses. She dresses in tweed and hobnobs with aristocracy. She poses in Vogue magazine in a twin set with pearls feeding pet chickens.
Okay, see, the pet chickens I can get on board with.
Ugh, that makes one of us. It's about as far removed as you can get from the old Madonna. She's not the outspoken girl from the suburbs of Detroit anymore. Now, she's a proper lady of the manor. It's like she didn't just become British. She became upper crust British, aristocratic British, which makes her next career move even more confusing. In April 2003, Madonna releases her ninth album, American Life. It's part protest album because she's against the Iraq War. And it's part commentary on the American dream because she thinks it's gotten too materialistic. Honestly, her messaging is a little confusing. In the lead single, American Life, Madonna raps that she doesn't need a lawyer, manager, agent, chef, three nannies, assistant, driver, trainer, butler, bodyguard, and stylist to be happy.
Okay, which is rich coming from a woman who has her own orangery.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Madonna's literally living the American dream in England. But in her music, she's trying to remind people that life is fleeting and material things aren't what really matters. But she doesn't get that she's no longer the best person to send that message. Stylist magazine puts it pretty succinctly, saying, "When one of the world's richest women complains about commercialism and the emptiness of entertainment culture, it seems hypocritical rather than insightful. She's raging against the life she herself is leading." Entertainment Weekly says the album confirms everyone's worst fears about middle-aged Madonna, that she doesn't have a worldview beyond her next Pilates appointment.
I mean, what else is there?
Unsurprisingly, the album tanks, or actually even worse, it debuts at number one, so Madonna's hopeful. And then the album free falls. The second week, the sales drop 62%. And then it falls completely off the charts. For Madonna, it's the worst feeling in the world. She's gotten bad reviews before, and she's intimately familiar with hate mail. But she was always in some kind of conversation with the culture. She yelled, and everyone yelled back. Now, the response is just silence. She didn't give people something they loved, or even something they'd love to hate. She thought her new life in England was giving her perspective. Instead, she's just losing touch. Younger singers back in the US are taking over the pop charts. Britney and Christina, that's who everyone's talking about these days. They're young, sexy, and new. But Madonna refuses to be replaced or put out to pasture. She might not have hit the mark with American Life, but she still knows how to stir up enough controversy to get the spotlight right back where she likes it, on her. She's just going to need a little help. It's August 28th, 2003, and we're back at the VMAs.
Wait, again?
Yeah, last time though, I promise. Madonna's just appeared on top of the giant wedding cake in a black tux and top hat. Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera wait eagerly at the foot of the cake in their matching wedding dresses. Madonna's the groom, the ringmaster, the OG. And in case the costumes don't make that clear enough, Madonna's also got the moves to prove it. She's singing her new single, Hollywood, as she dances down the stairs. As she takes the last step off the cake, she throws Britney into a spin. Then she takes Christina's hands and leads her in some fancy footwork. Madonna's moves are practiced and in control. Her technique is precise and fluid. She's better than any of the pros on Dancing with the Stars. She's basically saying, "I might be 45, but I've still got the moves, bitches."
Yeah, good for her.
Oh, yeah. She outdances both Britney and Christina, and they're in their early 20s. But Madonna doesn't just want to show that she's still in peak performance. She wants to show that she's still provocative, still sexual, still the Madonna that made her famous in the first place. She didn't dry up and become a prune just because she had a baby. Sexuality has always been a cornerstone of her art. And if the industry needs a reminder of that, then she's going to give them one. Madonna kneels on the stage and sensually caresses Christina's leg. She removes her garter, swings it above her head, and then throws it into the crowd. And the audience is intrigued, but they aren't prepared for what she has planned next. She turns to Britney and pulls her in close, brushing a strand of hair from her face. And then Madonna kisses her. The crowd loses it as she turns towards Christina and plants a kiss on her too. And these aren't pecks, they're passionate. They're kisses that no one will forget.
Oh yeah, that moment is burned into my brain.
Same here. And that's exactly what Madonna wants. With this performance, she's making a move to reclaim her place on the throne as the queen of provocation. And she makes it clear that Britney and Christina are just continuing what she started. They might be the flavor of the week, but Madonna was here first. She might be a mom and a faux aristocrat to boot, but she's still the same woman who almost got arrested for being too sexual on stage.
Okay, and does it work?
I mean, we all remember the kiss. So yeah, but also no, not really. The next day, everyone's writing about the performance, but most of the ink that gets spilled is about Madonna's age. The critics, who of course are mostly men, just can't look past that. One critic even calls the kiss vampiric, like Madonna's hoping to suck the youth and sexuality straight out of Britney and Christina's throats. And fun fact, years after the kiss, websites will pop up tracing Britney's downfall back to this kiss, when Madonna stole her life force.
Okay, I don't think these people know how vampires work, so...
You gotta watch Twilight. The point is, though, Madonna's career is stalling. Her last album flatlined. Her VMA appearance just reminded her haters yet again of how old she is. She needs to find a new way to connect to her fans. And Madonna's beginning to wonder if, for once, reinvention won't be the answer. It's 2004, and Madonna's in West London. She checks her watch. 3 p.m. on the dot. She's right on time. Standing in front of Madonna is Stuart Price, her new producer. He's wearing a robe and socks, and he looks like he just woke up.
Okay, was he not expecting her?
He definitely was. You'd think Madonna would be pissed, but she's not. She loves that he's not a stuffy producer. In fact, he's a DJ. He's been out working all night and actually is just waking up. Stuart reminds Madonna of her days as a struggling artist in New York, where DJs were like gods. He reminds her how much she loved going to clubs and just dancing. She wants her new album to be just like that. She wants it to be Madonna circa 1978. With her American Life album, she missed the mark. She didn't connect with her fans. But this time, she's gonna make sure she hits the bullseye. So it's not gonna be about making a point or pushing the envelope. It's gonna be all about pleasure. The simple pleasure of being on the dance floor and only thinking with your body. Madonna shoves a cup of coffee into Stuart's hand and barges right into his tiny, cramped apartment. She's excited and raring to get to work. As she climbs a stepladder up to his loft, she tells Stuart that the album needs to sound like ABBA on drugs.
Okay, arguably the best formula for an album.
100%. Madonna makes herself at home, pushing aside the vintage keyboards that take up most of the space. They sit together for hours, perfecting the hooks and brainstorming choruses. And Madonna hopes that her fans see how hard she's worked, that they'll get up off their feet and dance with her. But just as Madonna's ready to debut her new album, now titled Confessions on a Dance Floor, she has an accident that means she might never be able to dance again.
Wait, what?
On August 6th, 2005, on her 47th birthday, Madonna goes riding at Ashcombe Estate and gets kicked off her horse. She falls to the ground hard. She can't move. Madonna's terrified. She's rushed to a nearby hospital where they diagnose her with 3 cracked ribs, a broken collarbone, and a broken hand.
Ooh, that sounds so painful.
Yeah, really. The ribs and collarbone will have to fuse back together on their own. But Madonna doesn't really have time to wait for that to happen. Confessions on a Dance Floor is a dance album. If she's gonna promote it, she needs to be able to dance to it. And now she can hardly even move. The timing couldn't be worse. She's got a video to shoot for the lead single Hung Up. Madonna recuperates for a few weeks, but that's it. And when cameras roll on the video, she doesn't miss a beat. If you watch Hung Up, you'd think you were watching Madonna in the best shape of her life. She shows up with this amazing Farrah Fawcett mane and a leotard in a very 1980s shade of pink. She leaps and pirouettes from one end of a dance studio to the other, and her hair bounces with each step. She looks poised, but fierce. Madonna later says, none of the bones had gone together. Pharmaceuticals and my will got me through the shoot.
I mean, let's be honest, that's a recipe for most Hollywood success stories.
Madonna is convinced that dancing is the way back to her fans, so she makes it happen. And it turns out, she's right. In November, she drops her new album, and it lights up the charts. Hung Up becomes a number one hit in 41 countries, and it becomes Madonna's 36th top 10 hit, tying her with Elvis Presley for the artist with the most songs to hit the top 10.
Oh, king, meet your queen.
Bow down. And when she announces her Confessions tour, it sells out within minutes. 1.2 million people buy tickets. It breaks a record, becoming the highest grossing tour ever for a female artist. It earns about $250 million in 2021 dollars. With the Confessions album and tour, Madonna proves that nothing can stop her. Nothing can hold her back, not even broken bones. She gets right back to work and shows the world that she's a god when it comes to music. And there's only one place where musical legends go to be worshipped: Cleveland. It's March 10th, 2008 in New York City.
Okay, I thought we were going to Ohio.
Well, we kind of are. Madonna is being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where she'll be memorialized for eternity in a museum in Cleveland. But tonight, she's at a fancy dinner accepting her award and joining the ranks of the Beatles, Janis Joplin, and the Supremes, the hallowed few who have truly influenced and contributed to the development and perpetuation of rock and roll.
Trailblazer? Check.
Yep. It's one of the highest honors a musician can aspire to. Artists only become eligible for induction 25 years after the release of their first record. And Madonna's at 25 years exactly. Madonna's proud of this accomplishment. Really proud. But you know who isn't there to celebrate with her? Her husband. Her marriage is totally falling apart. She's really struggling to keep things together for the sake of her children. In addition to Lola and David, Guy and Madonna have adopted a baby boy named David from Malawi. But a new baby didn't fix their problems. Madonna later says, there were many times when I wanted to express myself as an artist in ways that I don't think my ex-husband felt comfortable with. And there were times when I felt incarcerated. I wasn't really allowed to be myself. It's also rumored that Guy, who is 10 years younger than her, said Madonna looks like a granny compared to her nubile backing dancers.
Okay, I would have kicked him to the curb the second he said backing dancers.
Yeah, that really grinds my gears too. But with kids involved and no prenup, the divorce is complicated. Supposedly, Madonna offers Guy 20 million pounds, which he rejects.
Okay, he should be so lucky.
I know. And on top of the money, he's also fighting over custody. Although it's bitter and intense, they do end up agreeing to joint custody of Rocco and David. And Guy receives around $76 million, including their manor, Ashcombe House.
Who needs that many oranges anyway, right?
Just scurvy victims, I guess. But look, let's be honest. Finding love hasn't come easy for our girl. She's going to keep working on that. Madonna, though, couldn't be happier with where her career is. And she's rebounded from her injuries even better than she imagined. She's in the best shape of her life. In August 2008, at 50 years old, Madonna debuts her Sticky and Sweet tour, and she delivers a concert that's on par with Cirque du Soleil. She dances for 2 hours straight and even jumps rope during her throwback performance of Into the Groove.
All right, let's see your granny do that, Guy Ritchie.
Hell yeah. And the reviews are pure revenge fantasy. Jim Farber from the New York Daily News writes, she may have just sailed past the half-century mark, but that didn't stop Madonna from dancing hard and fast in skimpy clothes for 2 hours nonstop. And then goes on to say, no slack in the star's sexuality or energy was apparent at the Icon show.
I guess 50's the new 20.
Oh, totally. Remember how she broke a record with her Confessions tour?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Sticky and Sweet tour sells 3.5 million tickets and grosses almost $500 million in 2021 dollars. It becomes one of the highest grossing tours of all time. From 2000 to 2010, the Sticky and Sweet Tour takes the number two spot in highest grossing tours, and that's only behind the freaking Rolling Stones. And Polestar still ranks it as the number one grossing tour for a female artist.
So for comparison, where do like Taylor Swift and Beyonce fall on that list?
Okay, I'm really glad I printed it out because I had a feeling you were going to ask something about it. Beyonce is number three and Taylor is number four, which not bad.
No, not bad at all.
Right? Of course, Madonna knows her worst critics will eventually just get louder. She's dared to keep performing even as she gets older. But now that she's cemented her place as a legend, she's ready for their attacks. She doesn't have to prove anything anymore. She's done it all and then some. She's ready to face the music head on and tell them to fuck off.
Life is busier than ever. It might be harder to find time these days to grocery shop, prep, and cook healthy and hearty meals. I get it. But Factor's got you covered.
Yeah, so Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, delivered right to your door, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
Exactly. And Factor is tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. If you're traveling or still finishing up last week's meals, you can always pause or reschedule deliveries.
I mean, I know I've talked before about how much I love Factor because it's just so easy.
And it doesn't taste like, you know, the microwavable meals you see, especially in rom-coms when we're trying to heighten and highlight how sad and pathetic this woman's life is.
Yeah.
They don't taste like that. They taste so good as if you made them yourself or hired a chef. Head to factormeals.com/rich50 and use code rich50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code rich50 at factormeals.com/rich50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
We all face stress in our daily lives. What if the answer to a better stress response is in one key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium, and specifically Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could have a positive effect on our stress response. But don't take my word for it. Here's a quote from a 2020 issue of the scientific journal Nutrients. Results suggest that stress could increase magnesium loss, causing a deficiency. And in turn, magnesium deficiency could enhance the body's susceptibility to stress, resulting in a magnesium and stress vicious circle. I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. It's the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/ifstories, promo code ifstories10 to get your Magnesium Breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. That's bioptimizers.com/ifstories, promo code ifstories10.
It's December 9th, 2016. Madonna's on stage wearing a chunky gold crystal bow around her neck that pairs perfectly with her heavily embroidered black custom silk suit. There are pink and red flowers on the lapel and golden tigers all over the fabric. Her stylist worked with the House of Gucci to create a flora and fauna motif that represents both Madonna's feminine side and her fierce side.
It totally screams, "I am woman, hear me roar."
You nailed it. Emblazoned on the back of the jacket, in red, is the word euterpe. It's the name of the Greek muse of music. Her role was to entertain the gods on Mount Olympus.
Okay, I should have paid more attention in history class.
Yeah, me too. But Madonna's look isn't an accident. She's accepting the Billboard Woman of the Year Award. She rests the glass award down on the grand piano on stage behind her and addresses the audience. When Madonna starts her acceptance speech, she's not just here to say thanks. She's here to deliver a message. She plants herself on the stage, feet far apart. And then she begins.
Thank you for acknowledging my ability to continue my career for 34 years in the face of blatant misogyny, sexism, constant bullying, and relentless abuse.
Oh, damn, she's not holding back.
Mm-mm. Madonna's chosen her words very carefully tonight. In her speech, she talks about what it takes to make it as far as she has as a woman in the music industry. She talks about her early days struggling in New York City, and she talks about the years that followed, how AIDS took the lives of so many of her dear friends. She then talks about how she was shamed for her sex book and for the Erotica album, how she was called a whore and a witch. And she talks about what it's like to be a woman aging in the music business, how she's been criticized and vilified.
And finally, do not age, because to age is a sin. You will be criticized, you will be vilified, and you will definitely not be played on the radio.
Ooh, this is heavy.
Yeah. She's almost in tears as she talks about her relationship to feminism.
I remember wishing that I had a female peer that I could look to for support. Camille Paglia, the famous feminist writer, said that I set women back by objectifying myself sexually. Oh, I thought, so if you're a feminist, you don't have sexuality. You deny it. So I said, f*** it. I'm a different kind of feminist. I'm a bad feminist.
And the end of her speech is almost poetic.
People say that I'm so controversial, but I think the most controversial thing I have ever done is to stick around. To the doubters, the naysayers, to everyone who gave me hell and said I could not, that I would not, that I must not, your resistance made me stronger, made me push harder, made me the fighter that I am today, made me the woman that I am today. So thank you.
When Madonna accepted this award, she was 58. Now she's 62. And guess what? She's still making music and touring. She keeps going and going. In 2019, Madonna releases her 14th album, Madam X, and follows it up with her Madam X tour. Billboard lists it as one of the best live shows of the year. Sadly, in 2020, the tour was shut down by the COVID-19 pandemic.
Damn you, COVID.
Seriously. But being stuck at home hasn't slowed her down at all. She's been working on a screenplay about her life with Diablo Cody, the Oscar-winning writer of Juno.
Yeah, my agent just called me to audition for that. Can't wait.
Oh, really? Whoever does get the part, though, will certainly be in for the role of a lifetime. So yeah, Madonna's still crushing it in her career. But she's also killing it in her personal life. She's found a new home in Lisbon, Portugal, where she lives in a 16,000 square foot, 18th century Moorish revival mansion. It's big enough to house her growing brood. In addition to Lourdes, Rocco, and David, Madonna's adopted three more children from Malawi.
Oh my God, six kids, just like her own mom.
Yeah, it's kind of beautiful. And she's found love again. She's been dating dancer Ala Malik Williams, who's 33 years her junior.
Oh, and I'm sure people have been nothing but gracious and respectful about that.
Of course, people love to not comment on other people's lives. When Madonna posted a pic of them kissing to Instagram, the comments exploded. People said things like, "It is sad to see that Madonna can't age with grace." And, "Is that her son?" But I gotta say, a little part of me feels like Madonna's enjoying the controversy. It's classic Madonna to stir things up just for the hell of it.
Ugh, it's her greatest skill.
Right? Madonna loves titillating the world. She pushes people outside their comfort zone, outside the boundaries of what society finds acceptable. Because, bitch, she's Madonna. And something tells me she's never gonna stop. This is the final episode of our four-part series, The Making of Madonna. We use many sources when researching our stories, including Lucy O'Brien's Madonna Like an Icon, Andrew Morton's Madonna, and J. Randy Tarabarelli's Madonna, An Intimate Biography. I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And I'm Brooke Ziffrin. Allison Reimer wrote this episode. Editing by Alana Hope Levinson. Our producers are Natalie Shisha and Dave Schilling. Our associate producer is Kate Young. Our audio engineer is Sergio Enriquez. Sound design is by James Morgan. Our executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Jenny Lauer-Beckman, and Marsha Louie for Wondery.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Once Upon a Beat.